What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 407 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. Great to be back with you folks this week. Got a lot to get to on today's episode. A lot of stuff with the local teams. Obviously, we're going to be doing a Celtics postmortem as the season has come to an unceremonious end. So, we'll certainly be getting into plenty of that, taking a look at, kind of what may happen this offseason. I think that it's a chance that you could see a lot of change with the Celtics. Also get to some Red Sox stuff as well. There's a little Patriots with the schedule coming out last week, so we'll take a look at that. Some Revs, little Bruins. So we'll get into plenty of that. Got a good sports-themed top five later for you folks as well. So we'll get into that before we get started. Would like to say thanks to Kyle Belanger for coming on to Guest Friday last week, talking some WNBA. We'll also be getting to some WNBA later in the program today as well. So if you have not listened to that, you can go check that out. It was a pretty much a full-on season preview that Kyle and I did. So if you are interested in the WNBA and want to follow along this season, I would highly recommend that you take a listen to last week's Guest Friday. So I think we are going to stick with the basketball theme. It's a good, segue, I think, to start today's program. And obviously, we're sitting here on May 19th, and the Celtics will not advance to the conference finals for the first time since 2021. Kind of had to think about that for a second, but it's been, a couple of years. Obviously, the Celtics, going all the way to win the title last year, and then making it to conference finals the year before, then making it to the NBA finals the year before. So, it had been, I think, pretty regularly this team making trips to the NBA finals and conference finals over the last couple of years. Really, you only think about the years of, 2019 with Kyrie Irving, team that lost in the second round in five games, and then that team in 2021 that, makes the play and loses to the Nets in five games in the first round. But every other year outside of that, Celtics have made the conference finals. I think prior to 2019, you have to go all the way back to 2016 to be the last time the Celtics did not make a conference final. So it's like outside of those couple of years, been in the conference finals every season. And it's just a little bit strange that, the Eastern Conference Finals will be the Pacers and the Knicks. And the Celtics will, not be involved. And I think this was a season that throughout, I think the expectation was this team is going to be in the conference finals, easily. We didn't even think about this team not making it through, the first two rounds. Now, obviously, things changed. I don't think the team played well in the second round really at all. There were bits and pieces of the Knicks series that they played well in. And then obviously, injuries happened and the bottom kind of fell out. And it just never seemed like they were right in that second round series. And, I think obviously, we sat here throughout the season assuming that the Celtics would make the conference finals. And Derek Welch and I, talked about this at the start of the playoffs when we did the, playoff preview, that we kind of didn't think it was even possible that they would lose before the conference finals. And, obviously, as I said, things happen. I think that they just did not play, obviously, didn't play their best. And then Tatum goes down, and it kind of was like, okay, there's almost a limit to what you can expect from this team, beyond that. And I think, as you talked about on Monday or on Tuesday of last week, after game four, that it's like really there's only so much more they can do. I figured that they would come out, play game five, and play their hearts out, which they did. Played great basketball, great team basketball. I think it was one of their, if not their strongest performance of the entire playoffs. And I kind of expected that. I expected that, okay, they're going to go out and prove that, losing Jason doesn't have to be, the immediate end to their season. They could keep it going for a game, but I think, honestly, I didn't expect them to win game six in New York. But to be honest, I also didn't expect that it would be a 38-point drubbing. I didn't expect that. And I think you maybe expected that this team would put up more of a fight in game six, but I really just think that there was only just enough energy for them to put on a great performance in game five at home in front of the home fans to be like, let's make this last game at the Garden this season special. And it was. And I think that you saw Jaylen Brown playing one of his best games of the season. Derek White was outstanding. Luke Kornet, I think, may have played the best game of his career. And so it just was, awesome to see the team play as well as they did. But I think it's just beyond that, for me, it was hard to expect that they were going to be able to win, more games in the series. Now, obviously, game six went a way that I don't think any of us expected. And it kind of just seemed like the Knicks played their absolute best game of the series, and the Celtics reverted back to the way they played in the first two games. Kind of the inability to make shots. And at times in this series, just the inability to slow the Knicks on offense, to slow their momentum. And, just very clear that once they lost Jason, they just were a lot more depleted offensively and weren't healthy either. We heard about Jaylen playing the last couple of months of the season with a partially torn meniscus. Porzingis dealing with whatever illness that he was dealing with, that clearly he was not himself pretty much the entire playoffs. And I think you think about those two guys, if they're 100% healthy, I think this series might still be going on. We might be getting ready for a game seven tonight, that I think you would think the Celtics would have a great chance, of winning and advancing. So, it's disappointing, clearly, and I think, there are things that happened beyond the Celtics' control with injuries, but there are also things that they could control too. I felt like there was a little bit of complacency, in those first two games, that the Celtics almost maybe didn't take the Knicks 100% seriously. And I would hate to think that it's because of the regular season that the Celtics went 4-0 and kind of never really had an issue with them. And, it's possible that crept in a little bit, especially in the second half of both of those games when they blew the 20-point leads. Now I think those games were more about their inability to make open shots, as evidenced by a lot of different looks that they had, especially at the end of game two, that they just couldn't make, wide open shots, that you knock down one or two of those shots and they win the game easily. So, I think once you lose those first two games, it's kind of like, okay, you then pretty much have to play perfectly the rest of the series. You have to win four or five. Then they played great in game three, came out and played exactly the way that you'd expect. But then game four, the defense just wasn't there, and they kind of let the Knicks and Jalen Brunson do whatever they wanted in the second half. And it just felt like, again, they just were never right in this series. Game three, I think, was the best game of the series, but beyond that, game five, obviously, they played well, but I almost feel like, I don't want to say it doesn't count, but it's almost like I felt like the series was over after they lost game four, and lost Tatum. And I'm not trying to say like, oh, I said that they had no chance of coming back. They certainly did. If they played better game six, maybe it's different. But for me, I kind of expected that game five was going to be their last, sort of game and chance to like put everything out there in front of the home crowd. And I kind of expected that, game six, the season was going to be over. Didn't expect it in that way, of course. I think it's difficult because you feel like there were things, again, things beyond their control, but also things in their control too. And I feel like it just kind of was a combination of all those things. The Knicks, to their credit, played a great series. I talked about this last week that it's not just all about the Celtics and their, inability to play better and things like that. Like the Knicks played a good series. Defensively, I thought that they played a good series, especially in New York, in games 4 and 6. Clearly they stuck with it in games 1 and 2. I do feel like games 1 and 2 were kind of more about the Celtics, inability to make shots and just be loose with the ball down the stretch. But you got to give the Knicks credit. They played a great, gritty series and were able to, I think, make a lot of big plays in this series when it mattered most. And, you look at both games, the Celtics won. They were both blowouts. The Knicks only won that game 6 in a blowout. The other three games were relatively close, were games that they had to come back from a deficit. And so I think you give a team like that credit that they played well when it mattered and out executed and outplayed the Celtics when it mattered. And that's why it's, you can't really look at this series and say, oh, Tatum got hurt. That's the reason they lost. It's like Tatum doesn't get hurt at the end of game 4. Celtics probably still lose that game. If Tatum's still available, do they win game 6? Who knows? Are they still playing in this series? Who knows? But I think, saying that they lost the series because of injuries wouldn't be giving the Knicks credit. And I think that they deserve credit. And I feel like this was maybe a Celtics team that, could have approached a few more games differently. There could have been, a better approach to some of these games, but I also think sometimes it's just, inability to knock down shots. And look, the way the Celtics play is the way that they play offensively. There's not really much that I feel like needs to like drastically change because it's like they won the title playing the way that they play last year. And it kind of is like, sure, you can talk about the volume of 3-point shooting and whatever you want, but it's like, I don't know. It's kind of the way that the game is played these days, and it's hard to kind of sit here and be like, oh, well, they'd be doing better if they didn't shoot too many threes. They shot a lot of threes last year and, went 16-3 in the postseason. So, I'm not going to sit here and debate about whether that works or not, because clearly it does. So, but it's disappointing because you felt like this team was in a good position, to repeat. And clearly, I think some guys dealing with some things as well in terms of injuries and, illness. So, I think this offseason's certainly going to be interesting. The Celtics, I think, are going to need to get under that second apron and get off some salary. So I think it is possible that you see a trade or two. Jrue Holiday, Porzingis, I think would be the most likely guys to get traded. I'm not sure about, other guys like Hauser, Cornette and Horford are free agents. Al Horford, not sure about, his playing after the season, whether he wants to retire to go play or to retire or to go play for a different team. Or does he want to return? Cornette, I think, could come back, but I think he also could have helped himself in terms of how he played this season, that there might be another team out there that wants to give him a larger contract. So, I think all those guys, potential to get moved. Clearly Derek White, I think, in my opinion, is going to stick around. Jaylen Brown, obviously, I think, Pritchard, but I think beyond that, it's kind of hard to pinpoint and say, oh, this person We'll definitely be back. I'm curious about, Jalen, whether he's going to need surgery on his knee. And so does that affect the way the offseason is approached? I think you have to assume that Jason won't be available the entire next season. And so does that change the way that you look at the offseason? Because I think it's not like the Celtics are in a position where they could trade Porzingis and bring in somebody making the same amount of money. I don't think that they have the ability to do that. So it's not like, oh, you could trade Porzingis for, Jaren Jackson from the Grizzlies, and the Celtics would be, back to being like a title contender. I'm not sure that they have the ability to do that. So I think it may be, a season of youth movement that the Celtics prioritize the development of Shireman, Keita, Davison, and a few of those other guys. And is it going to be a season where the Celtics compete for, a play-in spot? Because the Eastern Conference is getting stronger. I think you look at a bunch of these teams that did well in the postseason, and you even forget about a Sixers team that dealt with a lot of injuries this season. Are they in the fold? And then you think about all the other teams, the Pacers and the Knicks, Cavaliers, and the Pistons. So it's like it'll be interesting to see how they approach the offseason. But I think Brad Stevens is a smart guy, and I think will do, I think, what makes the most sense. But certainly, I think the team is going to look a lot different next season. I do think that Holiday or Porzingis will get traded. And so the roster will look a little bit different. I don't think that they're going to be a bad team, but I think it also does depend, in my opinion, Jaylen Brown. Does he have to get surgery? Does he miss a couple months? And does the team just, I don't know, prioritize more youth? And maybe you see the team lose more games than you would expect. But I still think, depending on what happens, this is still a team that I think could win around 40, or at least like in the 40s in terms of wins next season. But, certainly there's a lot that could change between now and then. But Celtics do have a first round pick in this year's draft, do have an early second round pick as well. So it is possible that the Celtics, bring in a couple of more, rookies. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what that looks like. But yeah, I think it's a disappointing end to a season that I think had a lot of promise. You brought a lot of the same guys back, and you expected guys to be, healthy. But I do think that certainly there were some things that happened throughout the season that, they couldn't control. But then I also think, they had played better in this Knicks series. There's a chance they would have been able to advance. But, it is just difficult when Porzingis, you really didn't know what you were going to get from him. And he kind of ended up being a guy that really could only play 15 or so minutes every night. And, when you expect him to be kind of a focal point that he was at times when he was healthy this season, you expect that you're going to be getting a guy that can give you 20 a night. And he couldn't even give you 20 minutes a night. So, that definitely was tough. And then, Jalen, I think, clearly playing through that knee injury, which credit to him to play through it. But I think they ended up just being too depleted, I think, to make a comeback against the Knicks. But then again, they put themselves in that position thanks to the way that they couldn't close out, those first two games. So, I think that there's, you can consider that, sure, did they deal with some injuries? Absolutely. But I think they also didn't help themselves by the way that they just weren't able to, make enough plays down the stretch in those first two games. So certainly it's going to be an interesting offseason. There'll be a lot of change, but I do think we should be happy that this team was able to get it done last season and win a title, because who knows if they're gonna who knows how long it's gonna be before they get a chance to play for another title. I don't think it happens this season because, Jason's going to be dealing with his recovery. But I think, yeah, it's good to appreciate that they won the title last season. Won't be able to, to do it back to back, but I still think that, this is a team that's still going to be competitive in the next year. It just is going to look a lot different. So I think that's going to do it for the Celtics. I'm going to move on and talk little Red Sox, who are continuing to kind of tread water, opening up this big 10-game homestand over the weekend, losing 2 out of 3 to the Braves. This is a team that's it's not the first time in the last couple of years that they've, struggled to win at home. But it seems like it's more the same with this team. We talk about here that we talked about this last week. They win 2 out of 3 in Kansas City against one of the best teams in baseball. Crochet pitches a great game in that game too against the Royals. Giolito gets his first win, pitches really well, and you're feeling good about this team. And then they go to Detroit, get blown out in that first game, which is, I think, when we last were talking Sox. And then you have chances, to get a couple of wins in Detroit where, you're leading in some of these games late, and the Tigers, hit a couple walk-off home runs and beat the Red Sox in game two and game three, and you get swept. And Detroit's obviously a very good team as well, but it just was like the positive momentum that you felt like they built in Kansas City completely got erased in Detroit, and then they come in to play the Braves. Crochet, I think, pitched fine in Friday night's game, but the Red Sox bullpen, unable to keep that game in the balance. Great win on Saturday, the walk-off home run by Devers, coming back from a 6-2 deficit. But then Brian Baio comes out yesterday and has 5 walks, gives up 7 runs, and all the momentum that you feel like you got from Saturday's game just dissipates. And I understand that, baseball is a long season. Not every, walk-off win or cathartic win is going to carry you going forward. I always think back to the 2004 series, that famous game where, Varitek stuffs his glove into A-Rod's mouth. Red Sox come back to win that game 11-10, which is like famously like one of the most famous games of that 2004 season. But a lot of people don't realize that after that game, the Red Sox didn't just magically start playing better. Like, in fact, I think they went on a losing streak. So it's like sometimes games like that don't necessarily have the galvanizing effect that you think it does. And I'm not trying to compare, Saturday's game to that game from before, but it is kind of similar in terms of like sometimes what you think is a momentum turning game or should be, isn't. And it's just, I think with this year's team, it's just the frustrating part is they can't seem to get any momentum that they try to, they have these moments of games where it seems like, okay, they're going to pull it out. Like that game in Detroit last week that they lost in 11 innings, they go ahead with the home run by Campbell and they can't hold the lead and they lose 10-9. And it just is like, you feel like every time this team has a positive moment or a positive series, it just comes crashing down. And it's like, it's not more of an obvious example than yesterday. You come off a 7-6 game, you come back from 6-2 down. Devers hits a walk-off home run, and he's been unbelievable lately. Hits a grand slam yesterday, and you're figuring out, okay, like, here's your best player playing at his best, even with dealing all with this, first base, drama, nonsense, whatever you want to call it. And he's producing at the plate. But this team just has this inability to build off of any kind of momentum. And we're sitting here with the Red Sox 23 and 25, welcoming in a Mets team that's been very good this season and are continuing, a homestand, which this should be, a springboard to, maybe getting this team back in contention. And it kind of seems like they're going back the other way. And, I just feel like this is a team that's in a spot where they need something drastic to happen. There needs to be a trade. There needs to be something, because it just seems like nothing seems to be working. Sure, you might be getting, Bueller back from pit from the injured list. He'll pitch on Tuesday, which will be good. I think Richard Fitz might be making his way back soon, but it's like things like that I don't think are necessarily gonna just change the team's fortunes. And it seems like they are, making an effort to try to figure out, this first base thing. Nick Sogard's played there, Abraham Toro's played there, and it does seem like the Red Sox are trying to see if Christian Campbell could work at first base, taking grounders before a couple of the last couple of games. But, he has also been struggling lately, with his bat, and defensively is kind of, I think that leaving a little bit to be desired. So, and it's understandable. He's a young player, it's a rookie season. There's going to be ups and downs. Like, that's kind of just how it's going to go. But I think, it's just, it's hard to kind of build any kind of consistency with this team, where it just feels like it's more and more of the same. There are certain guys that are performing offensively for sure. There are certain guys that are performing well. Crochet's been excellent. I think that Bregman has been their best offensive player. But, there are certain guys that are also, not performing either. And it just seems like a weird combination of, like, there are certain guys that are playing well, and you would figure that they would be playing better as a team because those guys are doing well. Devers and Bregman have been outstanding offensively in the last couple of weeks. Willy Abreu has been great. He's second on the team with 11 home runs. But it just seems like, outside of Bregman, Devers, and Abreu, you're really not getting any consistent offense from anywhere else. Trevor Story has completely cooled off after his good start. He's now hitting 230, six home runs and only 20 RBIs. Duran, I think, has picked it up lately, but I think for the most part, he's not really contributed a lot offensively, and it's just losing Casas definitely hurts. And I feel like it just is odd that they're not performing better, and you feel like they should be, and you feel like 23 and 25 is not where they should be. And now the Yankees are starting to win more games. I think Red Sox are 5 games out of first. It just is strange that, like, certain guys are giving you great performances. Crochet has been pretty much everything you could ask for. With a 2 ERA, 10.4 strikeouts per 9 innings, he's been outstanding. Hauk has been bad in terms of the rotation. Bueller's been good when he's healthy. Bayo, I think, unfortunately, has not pitched well the last couple of outings, so that's a little bit concerning. But, and Giolito's kind of not really giving you much either. Outside of that good start against the Royals, he's given you 4 starts and is a 7 ERA. And it just is like, that's not going to cut it. And then you couple that with how much the bullpen has struggled, that it's like the guys in the bullpen in those middle innings are struggling so much, they can't even get the game to Chapman, who's actually been fine as the closer, has actually really been solid and pretty much what you would expect. But the Red Sox, can't get the games to him because, Slayton and couple of those guys in that pen just have not been consistent enough. So, it just is, parts of the team that are playing well, but it's like the major stuff, the starters, the RA, not good enough. The blown saves, most in the majors, errors, most in the majors, their inability to hit with runners in scoring position. It's like those four categories are huge. And so it's like, sure, you can have good individual performances, but if it's not coming together as a team, it doesn't matter, and that's why they're 23 and 25, 48 games in, they're approaching a third of the season, and it doesn't seem like they've really gotten any kind of momentum going at all this season. So, you hope that changes with seven more games at home that they have, three games with the Mets this week starting tonight, and then a four game set with the Orioles, who have not been very good this season. So maybe, these next seven games, they can take advantage of being at home, but it's kind of, difficult because you don't really have any of that, confidence that this team is gonna, turn it around just because they're playing at home, and it's a team that haven't performed well at home for the last couple of years. It's not just a this season thing, but it's just disappointing for this team that I think we had, high expectations, and as I've said all season, they have expectations for the first time, and I think it's very right to be disappointed in this team, that they should be a lot better, and I'm kind of, I don't know. There's things that it feels like Cora keeps talking about in terms of that, the process is good, but the results aren't there, or something like that. And it's like, I don't care. It's like results have to be there. You're no longer a team that's, trying to like develop young players and like you're comfortable with. I don't want to say comfortable with losing, but like they're not a developmental team. They're a team that should be a playoff team with the talent that they have. And so it's just that kind of bothers me sometimes where it just seems like the results have to be there with this team. Like they're too talented to just be like, I don't know. It's a little strange, but hopefully it turns around. Red Sox and Mets. This evening, 6:45, Hunter Dobbins will go for the Red Sox, and then Bueller will return to pitch tomorrow night, and then Garrett Crochet will pitch on Wednesday night. So I think it's going to do it for the Red Sox. I'm going to move on, talk some Patriots. There's finally a good amount of Patriots stuff to talk to now, or talk about post-draft. Patriots did have their rookie mini camp last weekend. So good to see some of those guys out there and working out. So schedule came out last week. Patriots will have, I think it's the third or fourth easiest schedule next season based on the results from last season. Now, personally, I always take those rankings with a grain of salt because you never know what teams are going to be like year to year. So it kind of like, to me, doesn't really mean a lot. I know you can say, other years, oh, they've had a tough schedule, which they have. And I think, being a last place team last season, you're probably going to get an easier schedule the following year. But I kind of take the strength of schedule stuff and kind of throw it out the window, so to speak, because it's like you don't know what teams are going to be like year to year. So, it could be that, oh, there are teams that you think are going to be easier And they're not, games that are easier, games that are harder. It's kind of just like there's a reason why, any given Sunday is a phrase. Like literally anything can happen. So it's like it's kind of silly to be like, and I understand, like, yes, they do have an easier schedule. That's absolutely legitimate, but it's like I try not to, put too much emphasis on it. But given their schedule, I think I do expect them to be a team that wins at least 7 games next season, maybe 8, maybe 9. I think that there's a chance that they could legitimately be, a playoff team or in the mix at least in the last couple months of the season. So first, I think I wanted to take a look at the preseason games. So preseason starts on August 8th against the Commanders. Patriots will host that first game, and then they will be on the road for the next two, or the last two, in Minnesota on August 16th, and then in New York against the Giants on August 21st. So I think, we'll get into Patriots' schedule here. I think the season opener I thought was kind of interesting as it's against the Vegas Raiders, Josh McDaniels' old team. So kind of fascinating to see what that game looks like. It's also interesting whether Tom Brady maybe makes the trip as he's, obviously part owner of the Raiders. So that would be kind of interesting to see. So first four games, they got Vegas at home, then they're on the road against Miami. Not wild about a week two game in Miami. It's just a tough place to play when it's so hot early in the season. So, that's a trip to Miami week two, and then they close out the first 4 weeks with home games against Pittsburgh and Carolina. So I do think that there's a chance they could be 3-1. 2-2 maybe as well. I do think the Patriots are typically, well, at least under Bill Belichick, they were typically kind of a slow starting team. Kind of curious to see Mike Vrabel coach team. What did the Patriots look like out of the gate? But no games that really make you look at and say, "Ooh, man, that's going to be hard." I mean, how difficult playing in Miami can be. Pittsburgh, I think they always have a talented defense, but I do think the Patriots, in my opinion, going to be much better offensively. So, it may be that they do better against a team like Pittsburgh. Carolina, I think, could be interesting. Certainly, they're a team that's historically not very good, but I thought that at points last year, they actually played okay. So, that could be an interesting game. And then the next four, Patriots will have a 3-game road trip where they will play in Buffalo, New Orleans, and Tennessee. And then they'll host the Cleveland Browns in week eight. And then week nine against Atlanta at home. And then they'll travel to Tampa Bay in week 10. So all these games are at 1 o'clock, except for the Buffalo game week five in Buffalo. That's the night game on NBC. And then they'll be playing in the late window, 4:25 against the Saints on CBS in week six. And then week 11, they get their first Thursday night game against the Jets at home. And then they get their first Monday night game against the Giants, December 1st, also at home, bye week 14. And then they close the season. And they have matchups against Buffalo again, Baltimore on the road, Jets on the road, and the Dolphins for the season finale. So, kind of a difficult end to the season, but I think the middle of that schedule doesn't look too difficult. And I do think that that's kind of where you could see this team winning, 4 or 5 games in a row, potentially, or I think have the potential to win 4 or 5 games in a row. It is interesting that I think the Patriots are favored in 11 games this year, which is, I think it's like among some of the most in the league. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll win 11, but it is interesting that it's kind of like a lot of people, I think, expect them to be a good team this season. I do too, but I want to kind of be careful of the expectations, because I think if you expect them to win 11 games, you're probably going to be a little bit disappointed, because I don't think they're going to win that many. I mean, who knows? But it does kind of seem like that's a little bit lofty. But I think personally, looking at this schedule and considering all the things that we know, the team that they might be, I think that you could absolutely see 7 or 8 wins just looking at this schedule alone. Now, obviously, things can change. Teams can change between now and the start of the season. Teams can bring in players. Players can get hurt, all kinds of things. So I do definitely think that there's, room for change for sure, between now and the start of the season. But always a fun exercise to take a look at that schedule. The only game I didn't mention was at Cincinnati, week 12, November 23rd. But every other game, I think we got Patriots, obviously, with 3 primetime games. The week 5 against Buffalo, week 11 against the Jets, and then week 13 against the Giants. And then obviously week 18 could be flexed potentially into prime time. But I think every other game this season, other than the Saints game that's at 4:25, every other game this season at 1 o'clock. So I think that's going to do it for the Patriots. Actually, would like to note that Christian Barmore has been cleared to return to football activity. So that's obviously a huge development for the Patriots and for the defense. I think if he's healthy and ready to go, I think makes a huge difference in terms of what they can do on the defensive line. So that's a huge bit of news that I think is going to really help this team out. So, defensively, I think despite losing a lot of guys, I think it's going to be a very good defense this season. But I do think that the team's success does come down to the offense, and I think especially the offensive line and how some of the other, younger receivers perform. We kind of know what we're going to expect or what we're going to get from Stephon Diggs. I know that there's the injury stuff, but it's like, he's healthy, you know what he's going to give you. You know what Douglas is going to give you. If Bourne is still on the team, you know what he can give you. But it's like, curious to see what Polk can do, Baker can do. Hopefully they can make more of an impact than they did last season. And then Kyle Williams, what kind of impact does he make? So, I think it'll be interesting for sure. An offseason that I think still could see some more change. So I think it's going to do it for the Patriots. Going to talk a little Revolution. Played to a scoreless draw against the San Jose Earthquakes over the weekend at Gillette Bruce Arena, returning to Gillette as an away coach. So two definitely contrasting styles in this game, with I think Bruce Arena's high-flying offensive attack, which if you're a Revolution fan, you'll remember the team that won there, the team that set the points record, it was definitely a team that was high flying, taking a lot of chances offensively. And then you have Caleb Porter's Revolution that, more of a defensive, tactical kind of style. So I'm not surprised that it played to a 0-0 draw. I thought that Ivicic, goaltender, played really well for the Revs. I think that he was definitely the story in this game. Revs were only got one shot on goal in this game, but I think defensively did a good job keeping San Jose in check. And that's kind of been the positive for this team this year, that defensively they're greatly improved. Obviously, I think bringing in Ceballos and Fofana in particular, I think that they've played really, really well together on that back line. And Ivicic has been really good. So I think that's definitely a positive. Offensively, Campana, I think, left the game. So, he's been dealing with some hamstring stuff this season, which is not great. And I think they've had to go to the bench a few times. So, you hope that he can kind of stay relatively healthy. Kind of reminds me a lot of Gustavo Bo with, his time over the last couple of years where he kind of wasn't available at certain points. So, I think just making sure they're capitalizing on those chances. You know, it's not going to, they're not going to score three goals every game. That's just not the way the team's built. So, you know, it kind of is, they do have to rely on the defense and the goaltending, but it is good that you've now seen a team, I think, get their kind of hit their stride with the some quick math here, six straight games or a six game unbeaten streak in MLS play. So I think that, you know, they're hitting their stride. They're still, you know, kind of low in the Eastern Conference standings, but only 1 point out of a playoff spot with 18 points, 5 wins, 3 draws, and 4 losses on the season. So for the Revs this week, they will play a round of 16 match in the US Open Cup against the Chicago Fire. So that game is tomorrow. It's actually at Gillette, and the Revs will play in Kansas City over the weekend against Sporting Kansas City. 8:30 start on Saturday night. Take a quick look at the standings. Revs, as we said, just 1 point back of the final playoff spot in the East with 18 points. Sporting Kansas City, 13th in the Western Conference, 3 wins, 3 draws, and 8 losses. So Revs may have a chance to continue their unbeaten streak that they've run to 6 games at this point. So that's what's going on for the Revs this week. So they got 2 games, US Open game, US Open Cup game, and then back to MLS play. And then they will continue their road trip with 2 road games at the end of May, Wednesday the 28th against DC United, and then the 31st, Saturday against Montreal. So I think it's going to do it for the Revs. We're going to move on, talk a little Bruins, and see what's going on with the Bruins. I don't think there's really anything to report. Rick Tocchet, who took the job with the Flyers, I think was rumored to be interviewed by the Bruins. I did hear a report last week that the Bruins had interviewed a bunch of different coaches, about 15 or 16, I think was the report, which I think kind of makes sense that they talked to a bunch of different people. I think there is a thought that they are interested in one of the Dallas Stars' assistant coaches. And so I think that they have to wait once they get eliminated from the playoffs to kind of talk to that coach. I think that's how it works. So I think you may not see any movement for the Bruins anytime soon. You know, I kind of feel like glad that they're not taking a chance on any of the, you know, guys that have been around. I feel like it makes sense for them to take a chance on somebody kind of a newer-ish hire, you know, somebody that maybe's never been a head coach before and kind of can give you some new ideas. So I think, you know, other than the Bruins players performing at the World Championships, there's really not any big Bruins news to get to, although with the Panthers winning Game 7 last night against the Maple Leafs, I think that the draft pick that the Bruins got in the Brad Marchand trade will be a 2027 first round pick. So that I think will at least be, you know, a bit of Bruins news. I think though technically he has to play one more playoff game for it to really suit to for it to like officially convey, but I think pretty sure that they will get that first round pick in 2027. So I think, you know, seventh pick in the draft, a lot of cap space, new coach to hire, so a lot of changes for this Bruins team this offseason, much like the Celtics. So kind of will be an interesting offseason for both teams. So I think that's going to do it for talking Bruins and talking local teams. Get to some NBA here as the Thunder beating the Nuggets last night or yesterday afternoon in Game 7 over the Nuggets. Not much of a game here. Oklahoma City just destroyed Denver in the last 3 quarters of this game. They win 125-93, so they advance to the West Finals, where they will match up with Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think that's going to be a really fun series. Really fun series to watch. I do expect the Thunder to win the series, but I think, Anthony Edwards has been outstanding this postseason, so I think I would expect the Thunder win that series in six, I'm gonna say, but I think the Timberwolves make this a pretty interesting series. In the Eastern Conference, obviously the Pacers advancing, beating the Cavs in five games, and then the Knicks beating the Celtics. I do think that that's going to be another really, really close series. I kind of expect it to go to game seven again as they played each other in the second round last season. Kind of expect it to go seven again. I just think the Pacers, with the way that they play offensively, are really a threat to anybody, but I think the Knicks, the way that they played, I thought that they played really gritty against the Celtics. They're a little bit better defensively, so I kind of expect that they're going to win. But the Pacers with, Haliburton and Turner and, Siakam, who has that championship experience, like, I really think it's going to be a back and forth series. But I think the Knicks, there's something about them this postseason that I think that they win the series in seven. So I think you're looking at Knicks Thunder NBA Finals. So we'll see what happens. Excited to see what happens the rest of the postseason, even without the Celtics being involved. So West Finals begin on Tuesday night, and then the East Finals will start on Wednesday. In the NHL, Florida obviously beating the Maple Leafs last night 6-1. In Game 7, they advanced to the East Final to play the Carolina Hurricanes, who had beaten the Capitals in five games. And then in the West series, you have Edmonton against Dallas. I think both of those series are going to be great. I expect at least six game series in both of those. I think both teams, or all four teams, pretty evenly matched with each other. I think that Dallas comes out of the East, or Dallas comes out of the West, and I think Florida comes out of the East. They've really surprised me this postseason, just continuing to play that, same level of playoff hockey that we've kind of come to expect from them the last couple of postseasons. Definitely still stings to see Brad Marchand doing so well for the Panthers. I mean, good for him, obviously, but definitely tough to see him performing well in that uniform. But Panthers have been great in the playoffs, and I expect them to keep it rolling against Carolina. But I think that Hurricanes make it an interesting series, but it's hard to bet against the Panthers this time of year. So I'll take the Panthers and I'll take the Stars to meet up in the Stanley Cup. Although I do think Edmonton's going to make it interesting because they've won eight of their last nine postseason games. So they're looking really, really good at this time of the year. So East Final will begin Tuesday night, and then the West Final will start Wednesday night. Carolina and Dallas with the home ice advantage. So we'll get to some baseball notes. Phillies reliever Jose Alvarado was suspended for 80 games for PEDs. The Twins had their win streak ended at 13 games, and the Angels sweeping the Dodgers over the weekend for the first time in 15 years. So we'll take a look at the standings here. The Yankees have started to separate themselves from the rest of the AL East. So they lead five games over the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. The Orioles in last place fired Brandon Hyde the other day, so they obviously in need of a big change as they're 11 and a half games out of first. In the American League Central, the Tigers with a five-game lead over the Twins, even despite the Twins' 13-game winning streaks, the Tigers still remain atop the division. The Mariners in first in the West, 2.5 games ahead of both the Astros and the Rangers. In the National League, the Mets lead the East. We'll be starting a series with the Red Sox tonight. They have a half-game lead over the Phillies for first place. Cubs lead the Central by 2 games over the Cardinals, and then the Dodgers lead the West by a game over the Padres and the Giants. So we'll take a look. Some NFL notes. The 49ers coming to terms with Brock Purdy on a new contract worth up to $265 million. So kind of crazy that goes from the last pick in the draft to making all that money. So that's kind of crazy. Take a look at the NFL schedule that came out. So I'll just take a look at some week one games. The season opener will be in Philadelphia. Eagles will take on the Cowboys. And then the Brazil game, the Chiefs will play the Chargers. And then some other week one games, Pittsburgh and New York, which could be interesting if Aaron Rodgers decides to sign with the Steelers. Baltimore and Buffalo will play the 8-20 game in a rematch of last season's playoff game. And then the Monday night game will be the Bears against the Vikings. So I think, take a look at some WNBA notes before we get to the top five. A couple games yesterday, the Mystics beat the Connecticut Sun 90-85. The first game for the Sun, so they lose to 90-85. The final score, and then Minnesota beating the Sparks 89-75. There were a couple games Saturday. Caught a little bit of the Liberty and Aces. Liberty raised their championship banner and beat the Aces 92-78. And then the Fever beat the Sky 93-58. A little bit of a skirmish in that game between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, so the rivalry is still very much alive there, but unfortunate that there's been reported some hateful comments that have been directed toward Angel Reese, which is just too bad, because it's just like the two of them, I feel like, have such a exciting rivalry that I think is good for the sport, but then it's like, I don't know, it just makes it not fun when there's comments like that, where it's just like completely unnecessary and just no place in the game for that sort of thing. I just feel like, don't know why we can't just enjoy the rivalry, because it's like something that I think makes it interesting, but it just defeats the purpose when there are comments like that. So that's just kind of unfortunate. And then Phoenix winning the other game, beating the Storm 81-59. So I'll keep you updated on the season the rest of the way. Great guest Friday, obviously. Last week, if you haven't listened to it, definitely recommend to go listen to it if you have not already. So I think that's going to do it for the sports this week, although we will stick with sports here to do our top five. So I spent a little bit of time the last 2 weekends watching some NCAA lacrosse, both men's and women's, and so got me thinking about other, you know, non-major sports that I enjoy watching. So I figured this would be a good top five this week. So we're doing the top five non-major sports. So we're excluding baseball, basketball, hockey, and football. So just focusing on five sports that I enjoy watching. So at number five, I think we'll start at number five, starting with my favorite, or one of my favorite sporting events that I like to watch during the Summer Olympics, and that's water polo. Just absolutely fascinated by the athletic ability of people that play that sport. You know, the stamina that you have to have, and just the crazy athletic ability that you have to have, swimming, maintaining your balance, and being able to, play a sport like that at a high level. It's just such a fascinating sport to watch. So I always enjoy watching that during the Summer Olympics. So that's a good number five. Number four, I have rugby. It's a game that I've known plenty about pretty much my whole life. My older brother played a little rugby in high school. I have a number of friends in college that played. So it's definitely a fun sport to watch. Rules are a little bit difficult to pick up, but it is a really, really exciting sport to watch. So always have a great time taking in some of those games. Number three, I have tennis, a sport that I really enjoy watching. The major tournaments, Wimbledon, US Open, definitely always fun to be able to pay attention to those tournaments. Some of the best athletes of all time, compete in this sport. So it's definitely, fun when you're able to watch, some of the legends. And obviously, I've been really lucky to be able to see a lot of them during my lifetime. So that's definitely a sport that I enjoy watching. Number two, I have lacrosse. It's a game that both my brothers played for quite a bit as they were growing up. So definitely a game that I enjoy watching. Been to a lot of Major League Lacrosse games back in the day when it was the MLL, not the PLL, but definitely a sport I still enjoy watching. Obviously we've had some folks on the podcast talking lacrosse over the last couple years or so, but really enjoy watching that sport. Definitely was a sport that I enjoyed covering and broadcasting when I was in high school. So definitely still really enjoy the sport. Then number one, I have soccer. Definitely a sport that obviously I've talked plenty about in this program. Love the Revolution, follow the Premier League a little bit, and do enjoy the international tournament. So obviously the World Cup that's coming to the US next summer is going to be really, really exciting. So I think that's a good list. I got some honorable mentions here. Golf has been a sport that I've come around to a little bit in recent years. Obviously we had Chris Burns on Guest Friday talking Masters this year and the year before, so kind of gotten into it a little bit. Do you enjoy volleyball as well? It's a sport that I covered when I was in high school as well, so that's definitely always a fun sport to watch. I do, kind of enjoy skiing as well. Downhill and ski jumping is really, really cool to me. So just a couple of other sports that definitely enjoy watching when they're on, Olympics a little bit with both volleyball and skiing. So I think that's probably going to do it for me this week. Obviously, you can always listen to the pod on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and you can follow along on the socials on Facebook and Twitter as well. So we will likely be back with you folks next week. Got some scheduling stuff. May not be able to do a Guest Friday this week, but we will certainly be back with you folks next week with a new episode.